It's my pleasure to welcome local board chair Paul Walden. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Chris. Good morning, listeners. How are you?
The issue that never goes away. It's round and round and round we go. Mātiatia.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, is it fixable?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, we'll examine that in a bit more. So, I mean, let's start off with this trial of the tour buses. So, most people, I think, will be aware that we're kind of partway through a trial where tour operators, rather than coming into the keyhole with a turnaround there, kind of back near the old Harbour Masters building, and there's some yellow duck footprints on the ground, and the
penguin footprints.
Is that what they
are? Yes.
Right. I thought they were ducks. I thought it was the goose.
No. Well, yeah, maybe. Yeah. No, they're actually a scale model of a penguin footprint.
Right. I'm sure that some consultant spent quite a lot of time working that out.
No, not at all.
Okay. It was the Walden children?
No. Actually, it was Darlene from the Tourism Forum came up with the idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got and then the idea is that the people going on tours and so on get off the ferry, follow the footsteps, it's about a 300 metre walk?
200 metres.
Yep. Yeah. And get on the tour buses and off they go.
Yep.
So, this was talked about last year, wasn't it, this trial?
Yes.
Yeah. And then kind of when we got to the end of the busy period, the trial began.
Yes.
So what was the delay?
There's been... I'm just going to wind that back a bit and just contextualise this. So, there's been an awareness quite broadly that things need to change within the keyhole. And so there's been quite a process of working through a whole sort of range of options over the last 3 years, actually. And a few different things trialled. We had a trial the previous summer, and coming into this summer, there was the need to do some physical works on the ground to enable the big buses to turn around or to manoeuvre through the top end of the car park, and it was quite ambitious of us to expect to have that happen in the lead up to the Christmas busy period. But on the other hand, there was also some caution, legitimate caution, from the tour operators as to whether it was actually appropriate to be kicking off a trial of this nature, smack in the busy period. And so in some respects, yes, a lot of the physical works were actually done against all odds in the lead up to Christmas. There was signage and other things that still needed to be sorted out, but it wasn't a problem, I don't think, from anyone's viewpoint that's been involved in the process, that the trial was delayed, to start after that sort of the Christmas madness period. So, fundamentally, there needs to be, and we all know it, and we're kind of, there's a very broad awareness that things need to change at Mātiatia, and there's an understanding that, the way things work on the ground will change significantly. But at the same time, I think there's a naive hope that we all hold that somehow we can just wave a magic wand and it's going to be fixed overnight without it having any negative impact on anyone.
Well, it seems like every 6 months someone has an idea and then there's another group that go, hold on, you can't do that. I mean, we've got the tour buses moved at the moment.
Yeah.
So we've got people getting off in the wettest summer we've ever had, walking the 200 or 300 metres.
Well, that's not our fault, Chris. I mean, if you could just fix the weather, then we'd be sorted.
Well, but there's, I suppose, tour operators are legitimately asking questions. Is this what we want when people arrive on the island, that they trudge through torrential rain to get to a gravel car park?
Well, there's a range of issues there, but I think, and I'm not suggesting for a minute that is acceptable, but I just find it peculiar at the fierceness of the protestations from some of the tour operators, who have engaged the legal teams that, challenge the expectations or the health and safety concerns associated with their bus drivers having to walk across the car park. And yet, you know, we're okay with this being, you know, a means for several thousand commuters every day to get from their vehicles down to the wharf. So, you know, there is infrastructure that needs to be fixed at Maatetea. And it's not right that we ring-fence the best covered infrastructure with the concrete footpath for, a group. And that's not to, it would be nice to be, and we are working towards a scenario where, you know, it would be nice to expect that we can actually have a covered concrete footpath that's extending, you know, up into a parked area, you know, or a pick up and drop off area that enables those outcomes for everyone. But, you know, and then there's an aside to that as well, and I think you only have to look at the, and some of the challenges that have come through this, you know, what has been a long public discussion around what should and shouldn't be happening there. But, you know, in some cases you might have someone who's running a private hotel or a tourist venue. It might be the backpackers that's, you know, picking up a bus or, a van or a carload full of people, but they're not a tour operator per se, so they can't park in the keyhole. They, you know, manage to do things outside of the keyhole. And some of the complications, and then this was highlighted through the marina hearing at Maatetea, and I don't know if you remember, but, you know, Paul the parking warden achieved great notoriety in the environment court because there was this whole structure where the parking wardens were managing what was and wasn't happening at Maatetea, but they had no legal mandate to do it. And functionally, it's a road, and anyone's entitled to, you know, to use the road. One of the things that's could be perceived to have frustrated, but actually it's sort of made things clearer. We've had the arrival of, you know, Uber in recent years, and then there's been an associated series of amendments to the Land Transport Act, which have just changed all the classifications for commercial type operators. So it's now very simple. There's no distinction between, you know, an Uber, a shuttle bus or a taxi. They're all classified as small passenger service vehicles. But in order for them to park in a small passenger service vehicle rank, they have to be available for hire and standing with their vehicle. So automatically you wind up with anything that's been pre-booked in some different category. And then you look at how can you manage pre-booked in the same fashion which you might manage picking up your wife from the ferry, or your wife picking up you from the ferry, because there's no real difference there. And there's actually a need to make sure that we've got adequate infrastructure that's close and accessible and safe to get to and from.
It does seem like there's a lot of kind of things going on at the same time. They kind of stumble over one another.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
So we've got this trial that's going on at the moment. At the same time, the board has commissioned Direction Maatetea to do a review not only of parking, but of the whole bay and management of the bay. And that's ongoing, that investigation. So, I mean, I'm not sure when the report on that's due. And then we've got Auckland Transport about to start consultation on the buses. Mm. That's kicking off in March.
Yes.
And so all of these things all cross over one another.
There's lots of moving parts here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and then we've now got the board saying, ahead of the report that Direction Maatetea commissioned to come out with, the board saying, as part of your, you know, part of your draft plan, we want to control the whole place.
Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, aren't the board getting ahead of yourself there?
Not at all, Chris. And, you know, this is a really complex landscape down there. There is a reality when the Auckland Super City was established, the Auckland Transition Agency, which was the agency charged by central government on determining how the city was going to run, established an entity at that stage called the Auckland Development Agency, which was responsible for either developing or disposing of land which the transition agency deemed to be surplus to council's requirements. So to contextualise this in Maatetea, the only piece of land that's actually was identified through that process as necessary to keep was the lower part of the Tarsiel car park. So everything else was on the block, and actually remains so today. And so part of the thrust of, you know, we know that there's a strategic need for that infrastructure, you know, that broader landholding at Maatetea to be developed in a strategic fashion that, you know, protects our identity and our arrival and provides for the needs of commuters, for, you know, our elders and so to get off the island and park and all that sort of thing, but also to provide for our visitor industry to be able to, you know, have their guests arrive on the island and pick them up and drop them off and have a good time and all that sort of thing. So, you know we need to hang on to that piece of land down there. And so we've had to really look at, you know, challenging this on a number of fronts, which have ranged from a, you know, series of legal, soft legal submissions through the council's long-term plan, you know, where we've pegged back to the Local Government Auckland Council Act, the expectation that decision-making for local activities would be made locally, and therefore this land should be controlled by the local board and not by, you know, the Auckland Development Agency. we've commissioned this work with Direction Mātētia. You know, and John Hawkesby gave an interesting talk on the beach at Mātētia where he sort of talked about the, you know, the first time that the community went to court with a group called Kapow, I think it was, back in the day, which ultimately pressured council into buying that land holding, and then the second, you know, court hearing with the marina, and really quite a strong challenge and an awareness that, you know, unless we can get the community on board with what the council is going to do with the land that council owns at Mātētia, nothing's going to happen, and the whole thing's kind of been paralysed, which just leaves the soft, easy option for council just to sell it. You know, it's a valuable piece of waterfront land and a busy terminal. And so, you know, that's really the necessity in that sense for the community, by virtue of Direction Mātētia, you know, who openly had, you know, some serious expert input, you know, traffic and planning and all sorts of things, and connections through that marina hearing. So there's a lot of knowledge there that doesn't necessarily, you know, compute across council. And then you'll notice more recently there's a submission through this current council's long-term plan, which has been, you know, again, is this plea for local control, you know, which I think we will get some sort of element of halfway house. I think it's reasonable to expect that the control will shift from, you know, the Panuku, which is the new name for the development agency, back to council, and we've asked council to do that, and those discussions are ongoing. And, you know, which brings the control and management of that land a lot closer to the local board and the community, doesn't necessarily make it technically ours.
So wouldn't it just be easier to have a public-private partnership, get Wilson's in, they build a car park, they take the money from the car parking, they build a few bus bays, you know, they know how to do that stuff, sort of?
Possibly. Yeah, I mean, and that may be one of the outputs of the conversation. I mean, there is private land at Mātētia, on the other side of the road, which is, you know, which presently hosts a car park, but the planning rules enable a much more significant development there. I mean, and this is part of the reality. If you do a partnership with Wilson's, and or for that matter, if Auckland Transport were to develop a parking building down there, it would be user pays. You know, and your parking is going to jump from whatever it is, $3 or $5 a day today, up to maybe $15 or $20 a day. But, you know, that's not really a discussion that we've had as a community. There's a naive expectation, naive in the sense of the realities around the super city, that somehow the council, you know, has got an obligation that they're just going to build us a jolly great big car parking building and they're going to pay for it and we're going to continue to park for free down there. So I think, that, you know, the bus consultation that's coming up, where Auckland Transport consulting on a significantly improved bus service, has to be seen as part of a suite of solutions.
It'll be interesting to see that the outcomes of those bus consultation, because I mean, I get the feeling that with the new timetable they're operating, and the fact that people are getting on those buses and sitting on them, waiting,
in
Mātētia for 15 minutes,
which is madness,
thinking and seeing everyone else go home.
Have you ever understood why they've done that, Chris?
I cannot figure it out. But I tell you, it's really frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely, it is.
And I think it's driven a lot of people off the buses because they're thinking,
"Oh, you're absolutely right.
I could be having my first glass of wine at home, cooking dinner."
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. So and that's but again, this is part of the nuance, you know, which we will continue to work with Auckland Transport, and obviously this needs to be dealt to through this bus consultation. But this is a challenge that we have, where you've got a bus service on the island, which is part of a, you know, a subsidised public transport network, that's meeting up with a private ferry service. And so I expect that delay, you know, has been born from penalties that will be imposed on the bus operator if they don't leave on time. Hence, they've, you know, pegged it back 15 minutes.
Well, yeah, and you get the ludicrous situation, you know, where the ferry is still coming into the bay and the bus drives off empty because it's on timetable.
It's bananas. And yet, at the same time, when I talk to the senior managers in Auckland Transport, you know, it doesn't need to be this way. So there is absolutely a disconnect there that needs to be fixed.
So, I mean, how hopeful are you? I mean, you know, really the board saying, hey, let's you know, we've got Auckland Transport, we've got Panuku, we've got, you know, council. I mean, how realistic is it
Chris, I'm really confident. Look, irrespective of whether we're given it or not, I'm confident that we're going to have a significant shift for the better at Matete over the next, you know, 3 or 4 years. Auckland Transport and Council are all signalling, you know, an appetite, which is, you know, has frankly come off the back of the work that Direction Matete has done to date, and the community and the local board. Yes, there's been a pause and a hold-up with some of that work, you know, pending some discussions with Ngāti Pāua, and, you know, we all know as a community that there is an urapā, you know, in some fairly significant cultural landscape at Matete. And that is going to have a significant impact on the way that Matete looks and feels into the future, and it's going to impact on present car parking. And I think that's been the reluctance from, you know, Ngāti Pāua to come and have that conversation. But, you know, we just have to get over it, guys, and we've got to get on with it. And a part of that conversation is also ensuring that, you know, that Auckland Transport, and they say they're up for this, that they're going to get on and deal with the parking issues down there. You know, this part of this shuffle and the trial process has been good because it's shaken out some, you know, some skeletons in the closet with respect to the rental car lease out the back, and actually trying to get a clear picture, which we haven't been able to date. And I was just trawling back through some of my files, and, you know, the challenges of getting information out of council-controlled organisations, which, you know, we've had to foist off to the Ombudsman's Office historically, just to get information around leases and this and that and the next thing, and which we've never had, you know, transparency over. But that's beginning to filter through as we're putting the pressure on to understand what's what. And so we're beginning to see things shift on the ground. There's a section of car parking which the rental car business have kindly offered to relinquish use of. And that'll be coming online for public parking soon. So, you know, I think, yes, there's frustrations. There's going to be ongoing frustrations, so, and it's going to affect all of us.
When's this report from Direction Matete, Drew?
Well, it's like I say, they've been expecting for over a year a cultural values assessment from Ngāti Pāua. And that has been held up. Ngāti Pāua have been through an internal restructure, you know, unfortunately, but that's, you know, just a layer of the complexity that we work in. Notwithstanding, prior to that, we've had, you know, 10 years of restructures and delays across the council. So we are hopeful that we're going to get, you know, these things moving forward fairly smartly, fairly soon. And I think the significance of the Direction Matete work will really come into its own at the point in time we have a conversation about what the council can do with a section of land down there that they've identified as being appropriate for development, and what does that development look like. And so in many respects, you know, the technicalities of how you can best manage the transport at Matete, there's probably not too much room for wriggle room on that. You know, there's been a lot of planning that's been done over the years, and the really thorny question has been around, you know, what sort of development's going to be there. And that's, I think, well, I know, has been a lot of the concern of the community. And there was suggestions through that marina hearing that you might have a, you know, a development similar to what you've got at Half Moon Bay, was one of the things that the development agency were exploring at the time. There's been discussions around a hotel. You know, there's obviously a opportunity down there for a visitor type centre where, you know, visitors can be picked up and dropped off and get some wine and oysters and buy some local art and all that type of thing. There's the pavilion which has been in place for the sculpture on the Gulf. And is there an opportunity with some sort of performing arts space in that area that could be a commercial type development as opposed to, you know, just the raw commercial, residential, industrial type development? So,
or a swimming pool, eh?
Or a swimming pool, yeah. Yeah, that's been on the table too.
We won't open that can of worms at the moment.
How long have you got?
I don't think anyone's got long enough for that, Paul. All right. Hey, thank you very much for coming in. I don't know if I'm any clearer, but,
good.
You know, we've... you know, at least it's been talked about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that, just on just final thing, just, you know, you've put forward that proposal. So, this board plan thing. So, we're kind of at the draft stage now, and you're doing consultations.
No. So, look, the local board plan's nailed. So,
right. So, what's the stuff you're doing? So, consultations
at the moment,
on now?
We're going into the council's 10-year budget. So, this is the council governing body proper saying, what are we doing for the next 10 years? They've challenged every local board in the region to identify their number one priority. We've said it's Matete. We've actually got to nail these issues. We've got to put all of council's energy into fixing this. And that's what they're doing.
Okay.
So that's 10-year plan.
All right.
Good on you. Cheers.
Cool. Thanks very much. It's Paul Walden, local board chair, and you're listening to Island Life on Waiheke Radio.